Well, thank you again, John, for organizing this. It's really exciting time in the vision care section, and thank you for inviting me. I'm kind of here by default, by the nature of my past position. There are certainly others in the audience that have probably more clinical experience than I do. However, I'll do my best to talk to the points today. So we're going to talk about synergy with clinical services to advance public health priorities. So I have no financial or personal disclosures. John passed around the list of 14 priorities that we developed from our last year's special session. And he also passed around the statement of tasks from the IOM. And so the IOM delineates four categories to characterize the public health burden: prevention, care, evidence-based health promotion, and eye health, vision loss, and public health as a public health priority. And when we look at the 14 priorities that we identified last year, they really fit nicely into the context of the categorization from the statement of task from the IOM. So we see really that everything that we identified last year naturally fits into the framework of the IOM. But today, coming from a clinician's point of view, I want to focus on the prevention and care priorities. So from a clinical perspective, you know, what are these healthcare issues? And a disclosure, like I said before, I'm not a topic expert by no means. There are others that can take that title. So I reached out to our colleagues, previous chairs of the section, leaders in the profession. I asked them, what are the issues in clinical care that you foresee impacting the delivery of eye care? And what is the intersection with public health? And we came up with five topic areas. And for better or worse, if I do this correctly, I will either strike a chord with you or I will strike a nerve with you. And if I really do it right, I'll strike a chord and a nerve in the same sentence. So moving forward, identifying health insurance issues in the climate of the ACA, access to care, looking at integrated models of care, viewing eye care in the context of chronic health conditions, and telemedicine. So we know from the 2013 census data that there are 42 million uninsured Americans. Of that uninsured, we see the Hispanic and Black population bear the burden of who's uninsured. But there is hope. We look at the American Community Survey, we see that the rates of uninsured are going down. That's primarily due to 27 states and D.C. expanding Medicaid coverage. 13 states showed a significant improvement in the number of those insured. So we see more people having access to health insurance. 8 million people enrolled through plans sold through the exchanges. So in addition to more people on Medicaid, we have more older adults, and we have more children with a health benefit that they never had before. So we really want to look at, even though you have care now, are you able to access care? It's even more important that the CBO projects 19 million more people will gain health insurance in 2015. So our population is getting older. The population of older adults is due to double by 2030. From John Cruz's report with the BRFSS, we see that as visual impairment increases, so doesn't health, self-reported health. But still, the number one reason is no reason to go to seek eye care services. So why do we have this great dichotomy where we have more and more people having health insurance, but people not accessing it because they perceive no reason to go? Well, here we speak to education and promotion and outreach, both at the consumer or the patient level and the provider level. So when we look at access to care, Pinchansky and Thomas coined these five A's, and we're going to see a theme going on with different letters throughout our presentations, but I've got the five A's. affordability, availability, access, accommodation, and accessibility. So we want to keep these in mind of really we need to identify why people aren't accessing the care that they now have and that they obviously need. So one of the populations that has the least access to care are people with disabilities. The IOM just commissioned a report that was published really not too long ago on disabilities, and they identify that people with disabilities are the largest underserved segment of the population. So when we think of that from a vision perspective, we think of older adults with visual impairment falling under that category. We also think of children with vision disabilities. And they're likely to have unmet health care needs and a poor outcome of ethnic minorities. So this is a population that I think we definitely need to pay attention to. As a provider, we need to think about how we're delivering care to vulnerable populations. And the IOM has this nice little graphic where they show that there are external social, economic, and cultural influence, as well as just provider bias and stereotyping, that really lead to very disparate clinical outcomes of care. So that's something that we need to kind of keep in the back of our minds and on the forefront of our policy. So we have the expanding healthcare market, expansion of Medicaid, the ACA. We have people who are getting older who need more and more vision services, and we have a lack of access to care. And how do we take all those components together? And the integrated models of care really fit in nicely to reach those populations. There are several different kinds of integrated health models. I'm just going to talk about a few of those. One is the IPA, the Independent Physician Association. This is a nice integrated model of care for a private practitioner, a solo practitioner, someone in a group practice. I happen to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's Tucson VA, which is the largest integrative care healthcare system in the United States. I personally feel that we deliver excellent care to our veterans. But the emerging market of community healthcare centers, more and more community healthcare centers are coming online. They're going to be located in areas where people are able to access the care that they need. And there's an infusion of money from the government into healthcare centers. Almost $3 million will be provided to community healthcare centers in 2015 to specifically expand vision care services. That's the lower little graph here. We're up to 50% of their budget can be met by the expansion of funds in oral, behavioral, pharmacy, and vision. So we're looking forward to more and more community healthcare centers providing vision care services and hopefully improving access. Community health care centers are important because 1 in 15 Americans get their health care from a community health care center. That's expected to increase. There's been 21.7 million visits in 2013, so they're a significant provider of health care. We know that integrative care models improve health outcomes by improving access to care and the multidisciplinary management of chronic health conditions. But just because you're in an integrated health model where a primary care or a podiatrist or a geriatrician is practicing across the hall from you doesn't necessarily mean that that patient is going to be referred to you. One of the most struggling, as far as the clinician's point of view, is I've got an exam room, I'm willing to see patients, I'm ready to see patients. But yet, either the patients either don't perceive a need to come see me or the provider doesn't understand the context of where they needed a referral. So this is where this topic has been beat to death in the last 3 years about silos and healthcare. And we have our nice little graphic with vision care being in one silo and other healthcare being in the other. And we need communication between those two silos. And one of the ways to increase communication is to really, we need to view vision in the context as a function of health, where vision is just as essential to life as a healthy heart. And we know this from other surveys where it's poll people, what is your feelings or attitudes towards vision loss? And being blind ranks to the top. People would rather have a serious health condition like cancer or death compared to living with a visual impairment. So there's room to make improvement here. One of the ways to think from a provider level of this access to care, need for care, is if we put vision care in the context of chronic health conditions. For instance, obesity. Obesity is on everyone's mind. I hope you got to attend yesterday's special session with all the Surgeon Generals there. It was fabulous. It was just a wonderful time. And they talked about the Surgeon General's report on overweight and obesity. And that was in 2001, and that's when obesity went on the radar screen for health providers, and it's becoming more and more prevalent. The rate of obesity is reaching over 30% in the South and the Ohio River Valley. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Trust for America's Health forecasted what will the prevalence of obesity be in the year 2030. And we're on a pretty scary trajectory where the majority of the country will, over half the population will be obese, with rates higher, even higher than 50%. So with obesity comes chronic health conditions, hypertension, diabetes, metabolic syndrome. But if we take that a step further, there's ocular effects of obesity. We know from several studies that macular degeneration from the ARADS study, the age-related eye disease study, that a higher BMI at the onset of the study correlated with a more severe category of AMD. We know through the course of the age-related eye disease study that people with a higher BMI had a higher progression to a rate of more advanced ARMD. Diabetes. It's pretty straightforward, but glaucoma, there's several large epidemiologic studies that show a correlation between a higher BMI and glaucoma and cataracts, things like the Beaver Dam, the Barbados Eye, the Blue Mountain Study. So if we think of ocular health and vision care in the context of chronic disease, hopefully our friends across the hall in the primary care department understand the reason to refer to us. The last topic is telemedicine. Practicing in the VA, I'm very aware of the benefits of telemedicine. However, there can be some drawbacks to telemedicine. This is an explosive area. I think it was Deloitte that estimated that we're only tapping into 25% of the potential market for telemedicine. And last year, there were 75 million virtual visits. And I love this little picture here. Are you familiar with The Matrix? Who's seen the movie The Matrix? Okay. Half of you get it, half of you don't. The other half, you need to watch the movie.
You're assuming those who've seen it understand.
Well, this red pill, blue pill is a long-standing philosophical argument that you have two choices you can make. You can take the red pill and see reality for what it is. You can take the blue pill and go basically blissfully ignorant for the rest of your life. But the fact is, once you take the red pill or the blue pill, there's no going back. And that's my concern with some of the aspects of telemedicine, is once you make that decision, there's really no going back. So we have to be very judicious about how we proceed forward with telemedicine, making sure that it's used in a correct way to reach populations that we can't access otherwise, that there's proper follow-up procedures involved, and that we have a standard that we're meeting. In the VA, like I said, we have a robust teleretinal program. It's done very, very well. It's in partnership with the Joslin Diabetes Network. It doesn't replace an eye exam, but it's meant to as a screening tool. And it's been cost-effective. So in closing, John wanted us to kind of condense everything down to three actionable items. And so I'll have three actionable topic areas. Where access to care. More people are gaining access to health insurance, yet are they having the access to care? Even though you have a benefit, are you able to utilize that benefit? That's very important. Looking at integrated models of care to helpfully increase access and health outcomes. And telemedicine, the potential for explosive growth, reaching populations that we couldn't before. I was just at the American Academy of Optometry meeting in Denver earlier this week, and I forget the gentleman's name, but from the University of Iowa, was telling about his study about using an iPad as a visual field screener in Nepal. And although the technology isn't there right now, it was very sensitive and specific for moderate to advanced glaucoma. But we're more interested in is picking up those people who are at risk for glaucoma or have early undetectable glaucoma. You know, with telemedicine, and I skipped back, if I can go back, Google just launched their telehealth project, which is massive. What's going to happen is once you Google a health condition, the first banner that's going to pop up is, would you like to speak to a provider about this condition? Well, we need to be aware of what messages is that provider giving the person who's seeking out the information. You know, we know that those of us who are clinicians in the audience know that visual symptoms can be very misleading and tricky. But the bigger factor is the lack of symptomatology in early stages of preventable disease where we can have the most impact. So we don't want people to have a false sense of assurance just by having a virtual chat that everything is okay with their eyes. So here's where I think as a section we have an opportunity to develop a policy around telemedicine. I did a APHA policy search. There is no policy that addresses telemedicine at all from APHA. I think it's a good opportunity to collaborate with other sections because I think this is a topic that is not just specific to eye care. It really affects healthcare as a whole. So those are my three recommendations for policy development going forward in collaboration with the vision care community. So thank you.